This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Tennessee Williams and Shakespeare, what do they have in common? Well, they're both a couple of dead playwrights that are getting revived. This is Theater Geeks News for March 19, 2012. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour, and this is Theater Geeks News. This is our every other week podcast that I do that sort of wraps up some of the more interesting headlines that we have in the world of theater, not just community theater, but also professional theater. Pull headlines and interesting little factoids and tips and lists and things like that from some of the major publications and talk about them a little bit as well. And if you're watching on Ustream, you can join in the chat room. I don't know if I'm going to do this every time, but there is a but Ustream does have a chat room, and I'm streaming live on Ustream tonight. This show I had intended to tape this show yesterday, which would have been Sunday, and things just kind of got away from me, and I wasn't able to do it. So, and it's getting late here now, so probably a lot of folks are not going to be showing up unless there are folks from maybe on the western end of our listenership in the United States anyhow. But anyway, these are the news headlines for our March 19th, last week or so of headlines. First up, Chris Jones, who writes the Theater Loop in the Chicago Tribune, has said that he did a review of Philip Seymour Hoffman and Mike Nichols directing Death of a Salesman on Broadway. Not all that excited about it. The headline is "Feeling the Absence of an Everyman in Death of a Salesman on Broadway." I think what Jones was hoping for, and I believe that the Times reviewer as well, Ben. Well, wait a minute, I better double check this and find out. That would be Ben. I'm looking for him. He's a reviewer for the New York Times. His name is Ben. I want to say Brantley, but I don't know if that's right. Hang on. Oh, come on. No, it's me. I must be skipping over it. I'm looking at it online here. If you're watching me on the video, where the heck is it? Okay, slow down. Ben Brantley. Yeah, that was right. Okay. So Ben Brantley, his review was not all that great either. So anyway, I don't know. Does Death of a Salesman need a fresh look every so often? Maybe it does. You know, these are our classics. The Death of a Salesman is an American classic play. It's not the only one, but sometimes it's, you do them certain ways, and that's the way we do them. Although Mike Nichols has always been very innovative. And now one of Jones's comments is he feels that maybe one of the problems might be that Hoffman might be slightly too young to play the part. I don't know about that. I mean, if you can, the guy's an exquisite character actor, so I really don't know that his age would have a whole lot to do with it. Although, the natural choice would be to have someone the right age that is in the right age range. But this play is so wonderful and so well written and so powerful. I can't imagine that Hoffman doesn't do a good job with it. But and I don't think that's what the reviewer is saying. They're saying that it's okay, but it's just not sympathetic to some degree. Anyway, read the review. The link will be in the show notes, and you can check that out. All right. Tennessee Williams has been brought back to life, so to speak, with a play called In Masks, Outrageous and Austere. I got a press release about this play about 10 days ago or so, and their press release wasn't up, or their website wasn't up yet. It's up now. This is a group called The Culture Project in New York City that is mounting a production of this play, which they are billing as Tennessee Williams' last full-length play. Now, it is something that has been put together from two or three manuscripts and some other fragments of stuff, and this website actually talks a little bit about that. The director is a guy by the name of David Schweitzer, and there's a video, and if you're watching via the internet, you can see that there's a video link there. It's a YouTube video, but David Schweitzer talking about the concept for the play and the work that they did have to do in terms of bringing the script around. It looks to be kind of a much more abstract kind of play than some of the things that you might be familiar with, such as the Glass Menagerie, or some of the more realistic, I guess, plays that are Tennessee Williams's most famous ones. Anyway, so this is an interesting project. It may be really good, or it may be something that isn't necessarily worth reviving. But I think that these things are always worth reviving, and bringing forward, even if it's to show that maybe it wasn't his strongest work, but if it can be made into a work of art, I think that's a great thing. So, it looks very interesting to me. So we'll hear about it. It opens. Let's see here. I don't know. The press release. I'm going to go to the page here real quickly. While you're listening, we'll look. Yeah, it starts, looks like it starts in April, first week of April. So about 3 weeks from now, okay? So there you go. That's where you can buy tickets. You can buy, anyway, the link will be on the website as well with the rest of it. Oops, and I just closed made a mistake there. Okay. Next item up. This is Backstage Magazine's website. Backstage, the Actors Resource, has a list of the Broadway Power List, or the list of the It's the Backstage Broadway Power List, and apparently this is the list for 2012, and includes a lot of names that I'm not familiar with, producers and people that maybe don't get a lot of the attention from the general public, but they are very, very important in the theater. Thomas Shoemaker, president of the Disney Theatrical Group. As we know, Disney has been really expanded its franchises on Broadway. Jeffrey Richards, a few names, some other names that I am not terribly familiar with. Hugh Jackman, believe it or not, makes this as an A-list actor on Broadway. Ben Brantley, the critic that I think I mentioned a few minutes ago. Andre Bishop, Lincoln Center Theater artistic director. Stephen Sondheim, obviously people know who that is. And Mike Nichols, director. And there are a few other names in here. That Harold Prince, no, also known as Hal. I said Hal Prince like I know him. Anyway, there you go. Interesting list. And it's kind of neat just to kind of see who these people are and realize how many folks are, backstage not the forefront folks in the theater. And yet they have a whole lot of power. Theater Resources Unlimited. This is also coming from Backstage Magazine. This is on Wednesday. Day after tomorrow, actually, is going to be holding a panel discussion. Now, this doesn't sound like much of a theatrical event, but they're going to be talking about the name of it is, they're titling this event "Coloring the Great White Way: Bringing Diversity to Commercial Theater." Do we really have a problem? And I'm really asking that as an honest question. It doesn't seem like there ought to be a problem in commercial theater for diversity. If you want diverse cast, you hire them. And now maybe the problem is that maybe directors don't want diverse cast, and that's the issue that they're going to be dealing with. So it'll be focusing on whether artists have made any significant progress in bringing diversity into commercial theater, if there's an audience to support the work, and how producers can attract that audience. So we just have to kind of see, maybe they're talking not so much racially, but culturally, and it'll be an interesting thing. I know that in community theater we have problem, and some theaters have a problem attracting minorities into casting because they feel like they're not going to be minority people in a community may feel that they wouldn't get cast. We've had that problem with our home theater, and unless you do, say, a show that is specifically written to be an all-black cast or something like that, you may not get very many African-Americans to come out. We've gotten a little bit better with that in terms of being able to convince people that we actually do colorblind casting, and you can do that with a lot of shows. But I'd be curious to know whether you think that's an issue across the country. Is it a problem in your theater? Would you like more diversity? Do you have it the way you want it? And I don't mean that you want to keep minorities out or, you know, have a non-diverse performing group, but I'm saying, do you have that now? Are you happy with what you've been able to accomplish? Maybe send me some ideas of how you've maybe accomplished that and made your theater better in those ways. Send me an email, dave@theatergeeks.com. We may bring it up for a regular panel discussion not panel discussion, but for the panel, me, Marcia, and John, in an upcoming episode. So send me something about that. Anyway, this sort of struck me as an interesting article because I thought, gee, why is there a problem? Maybe there is more of a problem than I realize. So, and maybe they're not talking about a problem, but just a way of making things better. Now, this is really cool. Next thing here, this is also from Backstage. It's reported in Backstage. There's a new CD out, and it's produced by the British Library. And it is a CD that provides actors with maybe a new look or a new listen, actually, of how Shakespeare is supposed to sound. The British Library, has produced this with Shakespearean pronunciation expert Ben Crystal oversaw some recordings. He chose some actors and had them, present speeches from Shakespeare to give folks. It's got sonnets, speeches, and scenes recorded as he thinks that, and hopes, I guess, Shakespeare heard them. They're hoping that they're getting very close to the actual Elizabethan pronunciation. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this for you, because there are three samples here from Macbeth, one of the sonnets, and also from Romeo and Juliet. And there's an announcer on this recorded version that announces each of the segments. So listen up.
Macbeth, from Act 2.
Is this a dagger which I see before me? The handle toward my hand. Come, let me clutch there. I have thee not, and yet I say thee still. Art thou not fatal vision, sensible to failing as to sight? Or art thou but a dagger of the mind, a false creation, proceeding from the hate-oppressed brain? I say thee yet in form as palpable as this which now I draw. Thou marshals me the way that I was gone, and such an instrument I was to use. Mine eyes are made the fools of the other senses, or else worth all the rest. I say thee still.
Sonnet 116. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with a remover to remove. Oh, no. It is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempest and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark whose worth's unknown although his height be taken. Love's not time's foe, though rosy lips and shakes within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brave oars and wakes, but bears it out e'en to the edge of doom. If this be error and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. Romeo and Juliet, from Act 2.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? Deny thee, father, and refuse the name. Or if thou wilt not be but sworn me love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet.
Shall I hear more, shall I speak of this?
'Tis but the name that is me enemy. Thou art thyself, though not a Montague. What's Montague? It is nor hand, nor foot, nor arm, nor face, nor any other part belonging to a man. Oh, be some other name. What's in a name? That which we call a rose, be any other word, would smell as sweet. So Romeo would, were he not Romeo called, retain that dear perfection which he owes without that title. Romeo, daff the name, and for the name which is no part of thee, take all myself.
I take thee at the word. Call me but love, and I'll be new baptized. Henceforth, I never will be Romeo.
Okay, anyway, it's kind of interesting to hear that. We're used to a little bit more standardized and perhaps more understandable pronunciation of Shakespeare, but it's kind of neat to hear that kind of thing. Anyway, the link is there to Backstage Magazine, which also has a link to those samples as well, so you can hear those at your leisure if you don't want to come back to this podcast for those. Theater Backstage Talk, Theater Talk Back. This is a Ben Brantley article talking about the trade-offs. This is called The Trade-Offs from Page to Page. This comes from the New York Times, and Brantley is writing about the transition of The Great Gatsby into something called GATS, in which they really actually read much of the original text of The Great Gatsby and have developed it into a full-length, as it says here, epic-length adaptation of The Great Gatsby at the Public Theater. This is a production by something called Elevator Repair Services Service, which is a production company. But it's a way of, it just discusses when you take books and try to present them directly on stage, and you can read about that. Apparently this group has also done Faulkner's Sound and the Fury and Ernest Hemingway's Sun Also Rises, and that gives you a little bit of they've done interesting treatments of those texts, bringing them actually to the stage, and it kind of reminds me of a production, what I think it was in the 80s, in which a theatrical group brought Nicholas Nickleby, the novel, essentially developed the cast in some respects. The actors actually developed the actual play into the production, and they started with the original. That was the Royal Shakespeare Company that did that and developed a full-length play directly from Dickens' book. So, you know, it can be done, but this is kind of an interesting thing. So it's more of a think piece and something to, you know, if you're really interested in kind of exploring the whole issue of how and when and why, and, you know, that books should be translated or brought to the stage more directly than they are when they're essentially translated into a regular script. The next element on our list here, Theater Mania reports that, there's a video here and you can take a look at it. It's kind of fun. Bernadette Peters, and I think Bernadette Peters is just, you know, she's cute as a button. She's going to be appearing on Smash, and there's a video here that in which she kind of talks about that, and I'm not going to play it for you because I'd be violating some copyrights. And so, but anyway, take a look at that. It's actually kind of embedded from NBC.com, but Theater Mania has it, and that's the link that I put up. Playbill Magazine, our next element here is they have a trailer for a documentary called The Journey to America. And what it is it's a documentary about that's coming that is about members of the Broadway Education Organization Students Live. And it's a global, they call themselves Students Live, a global theater arts education company. And they brought students from around the world to New York to perform on Broadway and learn from some Broadway coaches and directors and artists, et cetera. And so it's a neat little trailer here and a little bit more about that that thing. I think that, you know, it sounds like a very worthwhile artistic kind of project, and you might enjoy looking at that. Playbill Magazine also reports, this is cool, Val Kilmer is going to play Mark Twain in a one-man show called I can't believe this, Citizen Twain. It almost sounds like, you know, Elmer Fudd with a lisp, you know, kind of thing. Anyway, Mark Twain, those of you who are in my age bracket probably remember when a guy by the name of Hal Holbrook, who's a great actor and is still acting, I believe, did a one-man show called Mark Twain Tonight, and when he portrayed Mark Twain for an entire evening. So here we go. Val Kilmer used to be Batman. He's going to do Mark Twain, and it's not exactly the same as Mark Twain Tonight. It doesn't look like he's going to be, there's some songs as well as prose, and there's some biographical stuff about Twain involved in it, and some storytelling as well. So it looks like a really enjoyable evening, and I'm assuming Kilmer can do a pretty good job with that. He's a good actor. Laurence Olivier Award nominations. These are the British Tonys, essentially, and they are they've been announced. Their nominations have been announced, and so I'm not going to go into it. There was one play that's headed for New York called Matilda the Musical, and it's going to be opening on Broadway in 2013, and it's really kind of top of the list in terms of nominations. Got 10 nominations for Matilda the Musical. Other nominees will be the winners will be announced April 15. There are, what are some of the other nominations? Benedict Cumberbatch, Johnny Lee Miller, for National Theater's Frankenstein, One Man, Two Governor. There's a number of plays mentioned here. A number of these are British that we're not too familiar with, although Ghost the Musical was recognized with a number of nominations. Ghost the Musical is essentially a stage version with music of the show that, or of the Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore, and Whoopi Goldberg movie that a lot of us are familiar with. So that's that was in London, got some strong nominations in the Laurence Olivier Awards as well. Coming down to the bottom of our list of stuff here, I thought I'd start something here. Twitter followers of the week. We've been getting more and more Twitter followers all the time, and one of them is the Hill Barn Theater in Foster City, California. Welcome aboard. Glad to know that you're following us. They are currently performing Crimes of the Heart. This is a theater in the San Francisco, I believe in the Bay Area somewhere. Forgive me if I've got that wrong, folks out there, but I believe that I'm right about that. And I don't know that this is a, I believe this is kind of a community theater. I don't know that this is professional, but in any case, in fact, I know that it's a community theater. But anyway, they are doing Crimes of the Heart now through, started on the 8th actually, and is running through the 25th. So next weekend is the last weekend to see that. This podcast isn't necessarily here to promote individual shows, and I'm not going to start doing that. But I just thought it was kind of cool that they followed us. And honestly, I can't mention everybody that follows us. So I'm just mentioning some of them that, you know, kind of caught my eye and were kind of interesting. We're getting more and more followers on Twitter all the time. If you want to follow us, it is at Theater Geeks on Twitter. We also are on Facebook, by the way, at facebook.com/TheaterGeeks. So we have a page there. You can follow us there. Other notable Twitter followers, Jeremy Cruz. Jeremy is a working actor, writer, filmmaker, teaches acting at the Lee Strasberg Theater. Strasberg Theater and Film Institute. He's a certified professional trainer. You can follow him. I put his Twitter handle there. And finally, notable follower of the week is the real William Shakespeare. Somebody is running a Twitter feed of called the Real William Shakespeare, complete with pithy quotes and interesting conversations. So if you start posting and you've got I got us following him and Shakespeare and Bill, we're on first name basis now, started following us and started asking me questions about some of the tweets that I had at but it's at William Shakespeare, at WM Shakespeare, actually. So that's the Twitter handle, except that It's not S-P-E-A-R-E, it's S-P-E-R-E. I'm guessing that Bill was a little too late to get the exact Twitter handle that he should have had. But anyway, this is listed on the show notes for this show anyway. AACT upcoming events are the TNT Annual Conference, March 16 and 17 in Tyler, Texas. Actually, that happened this weekend, so that's over with already. PACT Fest 2012, that ended up yesterday as well. That was the Pennsylvania one. I'm not sure why they're on my show notes here. They're probably on my show notes because I put these show notes together about 5 days ago, and there's still a possibility. But I had never intended to report on something that was passed. I hope those festivals went well, however. Indiana Community Theater League State Festival is March 23rd through 25th in Indy. Theater New Mexico State Festival, also the same weekend in Las Vegas, New Mexico. The ESTA Fest, Original Works Revival, that sounds interesting, April 19th through 22nd in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And the AACT, of course, New York Convention, July 10th through 15th in New York City. All of these, there's links to all of these events within the AACT website, and you can find out more information. And these festivals and get-togethers and conferences, et cetera, are all great places to learn more about theater and to learn more about how to do good and gooder theater. I shouldn't have said that. Better theater in your own community theater. So pay attention to this. That's all from me. And be sure to stop by the website, www.theatergeeks.com, and also check out our store where you can buy all kinds of interesting theater geek gear. And by the way, also remember that you can listen to our podcast on via iTunes, via your favorite podcatcher. There's one that I picked up that is great for the iPhone that was one of our buddy Rick Ellis mentioned, and it's called Downcast. Kind of sounds sad, but it's actually very good. It's kind of neat. It's actually a little handier on the mobile devices than, or on an iPhone, than iTunes itself is. iTunes a little on the clunky side on the iPhone, I think. This one's just a little easier to handle. You can also listen to us at the Blueberry Network, BLUBRRY. That's Blueberry with no E's, blueberry.com. They have a whole lot of other great podcasts at the Blueberry Network, and we are a part of the Blueberry Network. You can also listen to us via Stitcher Smart Radio. So check out all those possible venues. Find one that actually works for you and subscribe to Theater Geeks. We'll see you next time. Next week's episode will be myself, Randy Zonker, who was sitting in with us for one of our sessions, and of course, Marsha Fulmer. And we'll be talking about some of the big festivals and other ways to see great theater around the country and also up in Canada, believe it or not. Well, why would you not believe that? Canada's got great theater, and we're going to tell you where it is. See you next time.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.